Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
So I got an email from Catalyst Games. I'm on their newsletter, and they just came out with a new book which links to last week's episodes about smugglers.
Oh, really?
The book is called Coyotes, which is a Spanish word for people who smuggle Mexicans into the United States. So yeah, it's all about how in the Shadowrun world all the borders are really strict and difficult to cross over, and patrols are really heavy. But the book is all about how these smugglers operate into and out of the borders. So I haven't actually looked into the book, but I saw it on the newsletter and I thought, oh, well, that's pretty cool. Anyway, it's just kind of hey, nifty, we were just talking about that kind of thing.
Well, obviously it's for Shadowrun, so it's probably geared towards that, but I wonder how applicable or genericizable, to make up my own word, it would be if you were going to do, you know, people smuggling in other systems or other games.
I mean, Shadowrun is a pretty detailed and specific setting for it, so I don't think that there's much that would translate. But then again, you know, the kind of actions you do, the kinds of stories, at least thematically, would be very similar. And that and the high technology of it translates into a Magic campaign pretty well.
Yeah, we were discussing that.
It's one of those where it's advanced enough to kind of be Magic anyway, so.
Yeah, we were discussing that last time, and you know, I'm sure mechanics wouldn't translate, or maybe they would, depending on what system you're using. But if they go into sort of methodology and how they do it, you know, fictionally, then I'm sure it would be good for any campaign or any system you wanted to run that with.
So it's available on DriveThruRPG if anybody wants to check it out. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it before when I tried it out, but I was really impressed with it. Growing up, I never had much interest in it because the whole fantasy sci-fi mix was kind of meh to me. But the world is really cool, especially the way they handle the internet of the era. It's worth looking into, even if you don't actually want to play it, because the system is still kind of meh in my eyes.
Even the 5th edition?
I haven't played 5th edition, but it's still similar. It's dice pool, and nothing against dice pools, but I think dice pools get a little bit too much when you start getting into like full fistfuls of dice, when you go into like 10 die, and they start falling off the table when you roll, and it's you can't really count them up at a glance. So to me, it's a little bit annoying and overdone. But that said, it's the system itself, the actual mechanics work fine, so no complaints there.
We need a bigger table.
Exactly.
Yeah. I will not get into an argument about dice pools versus D20 with Chris.
It's not worth it. No, it's also kind of
it's
old.
It's always
school.
Worth it to Wayne. Right. Today, somebody mentioned, I brought up Prometheus, the movie, and Wayne just wanted to launch in, and one of our coworkers had to stop him saying, hey, I'm actually planning to watch this. And you can see Wayne kind of rocking a bit, and he's like, okay, well, let me know when you watch it. So then I can give you my thoughts on it.
Did he, like, hold a pillow up to his mouth so he could complain to it?
No, but you could see the wheels turning. I was like, what can I say that won't ruin the movie for him, but still allow me to complain a little about Prometheus?
You guys done?
Never.
The reason why I brought it up, though, Chris, is because of your recommendation of Honest Trailers.
Oh, yeah. It's a great channel, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I've watched them all now. They're really good, especially the Twilight ones.
Hilarious. Shovel face.
I watched two movies over the weekend. One was The Damn United.
And the other was Twilight?
And the other was Can't Hardly Wait, which is a 1998 teen comedy.
So timely as always.
Yes. That's on YouTube. I watch these YouTube movies while I do homework. So I guess I'm not really doing a lot of homework. But I got a Word document in front of me as I watch teen comedy. And then The Damn United is about the English manager, Brian Clough. And that was really good. It was Michael Sheen as the English manager. He's like a chameleon.
I know you said before, when you watch a biopic, you like it when they focus on one specific chunk of the person's life rather than them trying to do the entire life of this person. So by you saying it was a good movie, I'm guessing that's what they did.
Yeah, they focused on his 44-day tenure at Leeds United. And yeah, and then they'll just weave in like a bit of the past and how it relates to that particular episode in his life. So that's a really good biopic. So, you know, has a very clear start and finish. It's tight enough that, you know, you get the whole story, or feel you get the whole story.
Right.
Whereas in like something like J. Edgar or The Iron Lady, it's just too much. Hmm. Yeah. That was good. But not really much to do with gaming, though. Although Can't Hardly Wait did inspire me to try to run a game that's a teen comedy. Not vampires that are teens, or
werewolves that are teens.
Or yeah, or supernatural hunters that are teens. Just teens that are teens.
Whoa, thinking outside of the box there.
Yeah, so we all have homework now to watch Can't Hardly Wait.
I'm sure we do.
I told you guys.
Yeah. So in other news, we've had exponential growth in our Google Plus Idle Red Hands community. We've generated some pretty good discussion there, especially on the reviews of both Numenera and 13th Age. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people bringing up some really good points, both for and against what we were saying, so it's nice to see.
Oh, did people bring up points against?
Yeah, there are some people who disagreed with some of the things you're saying. The one guy, I apologize to you, sir, but I forgot your name, was saying that he didn't think that the dwarves got as shoddy a deal as both you and I were saying, Lyle.
Oh, Wayne threw me under the bus. It was like, oh, ask Lyle. I don't know what they were talking about. It was Lyle.
Sorry, how was asking someone to clarify a point they made, throwing them under the bus?
But I actually didn't make that point. I was just wondering. I was musing aloud and whether or not they were getting a raw deal, and then came to the conclusion that perhaps their power is significantly powerful, or their ability is significantly powerful that compensates for them not having one.
Well, forgive me for drawing you into the conversation.
Well, live and learn. Live and learn. So as 2013 draws to a close, we thought we would do a New Year's episode and focus on resolutions, gaming resolutions. So we decided to divide it into two. First would be games that we like to play in 2014 and sort of gaming-related resolutions, not necessarily games per se.
Cool.
Yeah.
So Chris, what's your game that you'd like to play, or games you'd like to play for in 2014?
Okay, well, the first one may come as a surprise to you guys, because I was kind of meh when I reviewed it before, but it's the Song of Ice and Fire role-playing game by Green Ronin, or Ronin, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Right, the game that needs a shorter name, besides Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Basic Set.
Exactly. Yeah, when I first read it, I read through it, and at the time I was really big into Fate, having just read it, and that and the Dresden Files RPG, and... I wasn't very impressed. To me, with the aspects mechanic that they used in it, it looked kind of like a lesser version of Fate, so I was just kind of pretty blasé about it, and I think I said that when we podcasted about it before, but I just reread it recently because I was listening to another podcast, actually the Song of Ice and Fire podcast, and it sounded really cool, and I didn't remember it having been that way, so I reread it, and I like it a lot now. The system is much more interesting than I originally gave it credit for. So, yes, I would like to run or play within that game.
If you were going to run it, what kind of game would you run?
I don't know. I've actually been thinking about that the past couple of days. Well, the thing is, I have a friend that I've recently reconnected with back in the States after how many years, and we want to play something together. We used to be in the same group. So we were talking about this, but he doesn't really like to run he's not so much into kind of the social side of the games, which I'm not sure how well it would work out, because so much of Song of Ice and Fire RP is about the social aspect of it. So yeah, sorry, I don't really have a good answer for that, but I'm interested enough in the system, and of course, you know, everybody knows that we're all fans of Game of Thrones here, so the setting as well. So, yeah,
Wayne,
I want to do it.
Wayne was going to run it maybe 2 years ago. No.
We talked about that, yeah.
Last year?
Really?
I think it actually maybe was about a year ago. I think around New Year's last year.
Huh. You were going to play one of the starting adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Now that you mention it, it rings a bell, but I thought you were the one who actually wanted to run the game, since you had gotten it first, Lyle. But... No, but that being said, like, I'm kind of...
No, you asked us not to read the adventures.
That's yes, right, sir. That's right, that's right. Okay, yeah. Just to show you how good my memory is.
I don't remember Chris bagging the game.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't bag it at all, but I didn't think that it was very good, and I think I said that. The game you wanted to try, Wayne, was called The Wedding Night. It was one of their packaged adventures.
Right. I remember that now. But no, I was really intrigued by the system and...
The intrigue system?
Yes, exactly. The intrigue system. Heyo, didn't plan that one, but thank you. Because, I don't know, part of how I judge a rule system, fair or not, is how they handle social interactions. Because I think that's kind of a vital part of the game. And yeah, a lot of it can be handled without mechanics. But we've had this discussion before, but if there are numbers on your character sheet that represent your social ability, then they should have some effect in the game. And I think A Song of Ice and Fire role-playing did a really good job with those intrigue mechanics. And yeah, I was really impressed with that. And so
when I read through it again just recently, I thought it was a little bit overly complicated the way it was, but I don't want to actually judge it without having tried it out, because it's the same as you, Wayne. I've been thirsty for some good social mechanics for a long time, so I definitely want to give this a try.
Well, if it's based on A Song of Ice and Fire, which it obviously is, like, backstabbing and social machinations are such a big part of the book.
Absolutely.
I think you kind of had to have an in-depth mechanical representation of that. Maybe not mechanically complex, but definitely deep.
I agree. There needed to be something where you could force another character, not just through, you know, GM fiat, but actually force them mechanically to capitulate to your point or reveal some kind of truth or something. It needed to be pretty stable because, yeah, you're right, it's a huge part of the game.
Right.
So
that's why I was kind of surprised when you mentioned that, you know, the person you might possibly be running it for was not that big into the social aspect, which I took to mean in-game as opposed to at the table.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah, why don't we play the adventure we were supposed to play?
I'm in.
That was so simple.
I think you just gave me my New Year's resolution, Lyle. Thank you.
So we just have the one resolution? All right, done. Yeah. No, I really liked that game from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is you're a Song of Ice and Fire hipster.
Yeah. I liked it before Chris did.
Exactly.
I liked it when it was on vinyl. That's how much I liked it. Yeah. No, I think I ended up getting most of the books, but to be honest, I haven't looked into what they've had out recently. I guess when you're not playing a game, you kind of lose touch, or you just go, well, I got enough stuff. Yeah, I'm in. I already made a couple houses, so.
Nice.
Well, I was like, when we play, you have to use these ones that I made up for you.
I'm down with it.
Well, I made them on my own. Like, they have a system where you can roll it up and see where you're from and
what did that entails. Did you properly roll it up, or did you do it like an old D&D character where you chose what you wanted?
No, you roll it up, and then I think we talked about it in another episode where Wayne and I ended up separately. We were rolling up our heraldry.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out to be pretty uninspired.
Right.
I think that's why I was asking, because I think you mentioned something about I don't want it to be like the sleeping lion. I want it jumping up and clawing people.
Well, we didn't
resplendent.
I didn't have anything on it. I had a shape.
Yeah,
I think geometric shape and two colors, and that was it.
Yeah, I think I had green and gold and maybe an acorn or something. I'm like, oh, come on, that's so lame. Give me a charging lion or something cool. I'm like, oh, yeah. I get to roll on the plants table? No thanks.
I almost forgot to mention, there is another product being worked on by Greenon, and it's still kind of in the rumor phase, though they have officially said that they are working on it in their forums, called Chronicle, which is the same system used in Song of Ice and Fire RP, but stripped of the setting. Which is also something that I'd be really interested in trying out, you know.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I being the hipster that I am, I remember when they were talking about that when it was an actual rumor. Wow.
So remember, they have put out a couple products, small products, maybe only a couple pages of new monsters or kind of encounters that use the same system that A Song of Ice and Fire is built on, but aren't specifically for A Song of Ice and Fire and have kind of no relationship to the Westeros setting.
Right.
And I think we had discussed this before where, you know, a book like New World of Darkness that is specifically kind of generic but not system agnostic, not setting agnostic, but encourages people to play games other than what it's specifically built for. Mm-hmm. And we were wondering that, you know, even though they've put out products to use with this system, the fact that there isn't a generic system book, we were wondering if people actually kind of played generic games or if that's harder to do just because you have to strip out all this fluff, you know, to play.
So. I think I haven't seen anything terribly radical that people have suggested. Some people have said if you wanted to play like a King Arthur game.
Right.
Or historical game, then to use the Song of Ice and Fire system, mm-hmm. because there's not a lot of magic in it or supernatural things in it.
Right.
Supposedly there's a hack out there that's called Samurai and Cherry Blossoms, I believe it's called, which is what it sounds like. It's a feudalistic Japan hack of it, which sounds really cool, though I haven't actually read into the system at all.
Hmm. I wonder if they would have firearm rules.
Right.
To get the Sengoku period. Hmm. So, or even that, what is it, Yojimbo.
Oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Blades and Cherry Blossoms. Sorry to jump in there.
Ah, Blades and Cherry Blossoms. Okay.
Okay, but still you don't know about firearms.
No. Right.
It's not like Blades and Guns.
Right.
But what you're saying there, Lyle, Yojimbo would be awesome to replay. That's a great movie.
But is it Yojimbo where the guy actually has a gun?
No. Yes. The bad guy has a gun in Yojimbo.
Yeah.
And the good guy has a gun in all of the remakes.
Well, that kind of brings up the game I wanted to try for my New Year's resolution, either play or run, though probably run. And that was actually Legend of the Five Rings. I think the current edition is 4th edition. So, yeah, I've listened to an actual play of kind of people learning and playing through that system. And as I said before, you know, I kind of judge a system on its social mechanics, and that game seems to have enough meat in the social mechanics area that interested me in playing, where it's a game everybody knows about, but maybe because I'm in Japan, I wasn't interested in playing it because it kind of seemed like it was, I don't know. Not hyper Japan in the way that, you know, some like 80s role-playing games would be, but I don't know. It kind of seemed like it looked at Japan through rose-colored glasses, and I've heard people say that, oh, well, it's not Japan, it's inspired by, and, you know, there's all these other Asian cultures mixed in there, but no, let's be honest, it's Japan.
I haven't read it myself, but in that way, is it kind of like Europe is to D&D as Lord of the Five Rings is to Japan, or vice versa, rather?
No, it's more closely tied together. Mm. I think it's not an island, so it's actually connected to some sort of mainland.
Uh-huh.
So they have a group of, or one of the clans kind of disappeared for a while, and then they come back, Clan Unicorn.
Right.
And they are like the Mongolians.
Hmm.
And there's a desert, and back when a lot of the story, and probably this is still the case, was developed through the card game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing where they, you know, cross this desert, like the Scorpion Clan disappears across the desert or parts of the Scorpion Clan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too familiar with the mythology,
right?
So much, but it is much more closely tied to Japan than Europe is tied to D&D, in the sense that I think you have one more degree in between Europe and Dungeons and Dragons, and that might be something like Lord of the Rings or
mm-hmm.
that kind of fantasy, which added. It's that other element, so...
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. Like Japan... Rokugan, with the name of the Legend of the Five Rings land, is much closer, in my opinion, to actual Japan than Europe is to D&D. And as Lyle said, Rokugan is not an island, but there is a large enough desert or, like, some other nigh-on-impassable feature to the east of this land, where it's kind of effectively an island, where, just like real Japan, there are pretty much no, quote-unquote, foreigners in Rokugan.
Hmm.
So, you know, but it seems, listening to that actual play, made me think, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. I'm digging the system enough to where I want to try it out. So,
I was actually really into Legend of the Five Rings a few years ago. Oh, mm-hmm. Actually, several years ago. Wow, 8, 9 years ago. But I never actually played it. I was just buying all the books and the clan books. This was back mm-hmm. when John Wick was writing the majority of the stuff, and he's the guy that created it. Mm-hmm. And I think I can't say there's necessarily something for everybody, because I do think you have to buy a little bit into the Japanese background to enjoy the game. But the clan, and I'm sure that's not a problem for a lot of people. But the clans are diverse enough that I think you could find something to your tastes.
Right.
That you have the magic user clan, you have the monks, the holy clan, as we mentioned, the Mongolian clan, mm-hmm. the clan of assassins and subterfuge and spies. Then you have the duelists and then you have the generals. So,
yeah. But as you said, Lyle, if people are not down with playing samurai, well, then okay, they're not gonna like Legend of the Five Rings. But if you buy into that and you're okay with that, then yeah, there is probably something for everyone. So there's magic, there's a bit of the supernatural with the taint, you know, and these kind of demonic creatures coming up from the, I believe it's from the south, but so it is
that's the one clan I forgot to mention, the guys who walk the wall.
Yeah. So it is a supernatural Japan, but it's, as we said, kind of closer to real Japan than D&D is to Europe.
And they use a lot of Japanese words that, like oni. So.
One of the complaints I heard when the people were playing was the combat skills are actually written in Japanese. So it'd be like Aijutsu, like, you know, Kyujutsu for all the stuff. And they're like, but all the other skills are written in English. So why? And
the martial arts are.
Yeah.
They're pretty good because you have. But I suppose that would be. I don't want to say that you can't translate them, because you certainly can. Like, one is Iaijutsu, but we would know it as Iaido, because you just practice, but it's the art of like drawing the sword. Mm. And one clan is very, very good at that, like the duelist clan are very good at that, whereas Kenjutsu is just swordsmanship. So it's I suppose it'd be the difference between a gunslinger and just the regular
fighter,
you know, gunfighter, I suppose. Mm. So guy who's a quick draw artist versus a guy or a girl who's just good with a gun.
Right.
So, it makes sense to me, because Japanese archery does have its own name that we do use in English. Like, it's a loan word, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, for that matter, so are the other things. I mean, maybe not kenjutsu, but kendo is.
Right.
Yeah.
Karate. No idea what kind of game I would run if I ran it, but I don't know. It's very interesting in that there's a lot of intentionally hard choices or ambiguous choices you have to make, because you know you're supposed to uphold the seven tenets of Bushido, but which one do you follow at this particular moment, and does that mean, you know, going against other ones, and you know, will fulfilling this daimyo's orders break someone higher, and who are you really supposed to honor here? So I like kind of morally ambiguous and difficult games like that, and there seems like there would be a lot of that in Legend of the Five Rings, so I'm intrigued enough to where I would want to run a game of it.
Well, it is a different morality, so...
Right.
I don't know what the books are like now, because it's... I think I'm about at least one edition behind, perhaps even two. But the first edition had a lot of really good stories, especially in the clan books. And like their version of the mythology, so you can start to understand what the clans are like. And I may have said this in another episode, but just about the clan Scorpion, where they had three daimyos. I think they had the lion, perhaps the crane daimyo. And that, for those that don't know, the crane would be the duelist clan, and the lion, they would be the general clan. And then the scorpions, who are the assassins and the spies. So they're talking about who has the most loyal servants. And through this game of one-upsmanship, you know, where one of the clans says, well, to one of the bodyguards or one of the servants and says, go jump off a cliff or something like that, which he does without hesitation, or commits seppuku, like commit suicide,
right?
Which he does. And then the scorpion stands up and says to one of his bodyguards or Yojimbo, he goes, kill me. And without hesitation, the scorpion, Yojimbo, just strikes him right down. Mm. And in the story, he gives a look to the lion, is like, this is what you did. So kind of that idea, that absolute loyalty, and that kind of gamesmanship, that's a little bit foreign to us, I suppose. Mm. Certainly, if we wanted to do a social game, it would be pretty intriguing.
Right.
Man, I wish you told me, because when I went back home, I could have brought all my Legend of the Fire Ring stuff.
Oh, sorry. Well,
too late.
I have the 4th edition PDF, so.
One good thing about living in Japan with this is that we can go to, like, Kyoto and...
play.
We can play, really get into it.
Cart all our books and dice there. Oh, it only uses D10, it's a new one.
I just plop down in front of the temple at the Heianji and start rolling.
Yeah. We could dress up, and then people wouldn't think we're LARPing. They just think we're just, like, you know, one, those poser gaijin.
Right. Well, you can go in Kyoto, rent the samurai gear and stuff. And
true.
Could do that, yeah. We could go to an onsen, but was it you, Wayne, that you don't like having... You don't like going to the hot springs?
I do not, no.
No.
Well, you like going to the hot springs, you just don't like being publicly naked, huh?
Well, that's true. I think Lau was trying to be delicate, and Chris is just like, let me blunder into that, all right.
You could play on tatami mats and eat traditional Japanese food.
So you mean like my living room?
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, what I was going to say is you go there and you go to the temples and you get like the little maps all made out for you. So you have these little temple maps. Mm-hmm. But I suppose you could just go online and do that.
No, but
But I mean, that's it, you know, actually being able to see them, you know, would really put you in the mood because we've all been there and seen that stuff, so.
Yeah, kind of difficult, this is going to sound negative, but kind of difficult to go when they're not mobbed with people, so you don't really get the full effect.
Now, there's some temples that, like in Kyoto, if you don't go to the big ones, but if you go on the Philosopher's Path, which is on the east
side, it's Higashiyama.
Yeah, and then you walk... walk along there. There's a couple of really good temples where hardly anybody goes to, but they got like the moss covered trees and
right,
and that's really nice. Or you could just watch movies, yeah,
from the comfort, from the warm comfort of your home instead of the mist shrouded little temples that you're getting soaked in.
Yeah. Oh, I'd definitely be down for that. Song of Ice and Fire role playing. I think a big question is: would you play the same house, or would you play the same clan, or would you? Because I think the two main in Song of Ice and Fire Legend of the Five Rings, Wayne, correct me if I'm wrong, the two main character types that you play are, of course, the samurai, but also the shugenja.
Right. 4th edition, I'm not very clear on the prior editions, but in 4th edition there's kind of three main classes, which are, samurai, as you said, or bushi. Shugenja, which is the kind of magic user, and also courtier, kind of the very social character.
But like, who would want to play that, really?
I mean, it could be interesting. I don't know.
Mincing steps, please. Mincing steps.
But
hello.
No, from
blacken your teeth.
Cover that mouth. Yeah. No, from what I read, kind of the mixed clan game is standard. Although you would have to tell specific types of stories with that, and I'm actually kind of leaning towards a single clan game, because it, much like in A Song of Ice and Fire, being from the same house or being from the same clan gives the characters in the story an instant connection. If I just say, build someone from this clan, doesn't really matter who, you automatically have a reason to work together.
Well, it was like Old Masquerade, where it made a lot more sense to be within the clan.
Right.
But most people did not play like a single clan party. They played a multiple clan party.
Right.
And, I mean, there were ways to do it, and Requiem made it easier to do it. But, I'd be down for a single clan. Yeah.
Cool.
I even had Clan War, which was the miniatures game.
Wow.
Okay. I suppose I still have it. I just don't have it here.
Oh, I was going to say, is there a little mini already?
I was building a lion army. Yeah, I could have brought miniatures. Man, you should have told me.
Well, it's not like I decided this last year. Anyway.
All right. Well, I could cheat from my resolution and just say 13th age. Oh, which we're doing next month.
Oh, resolution met.
Yeah. So we are doing 13th age next month, which I'll be running. But my resolution beyond that is going to be something that I may have even brought up last year as a resolution, and that was to play Werewolf, the new Werewolf.
Oh, the Forsaken.
Yeah, and to combine it with my Prophet TV series idea.
Oh, okay. I kind of brought that up when you were talking about the mythology.
Yes, yeah. We're going to change the mythology a bit for the werewolves, ground it a little bit less spiritual.
Now, Werewolf Forsaken is one of the books I picked up when, you know, after playing New World of Darkness, I kind of went on that spending spree. And, no, it again, not knowing Werewolf the Apocalypse and coming in fresh, I thought Werewolf the Forsaken was interesting and, again, kind of provided characters with a lot of choices about, okay, great, you're this 9-foot-tall killing machine, but people kind of go crazy when they see you, or, you know, you can't just walk around in that form all the time to solve your problems. Sorry, Chris, but, you know, so I thought that was interesting, and I would definitely be down to play a game of Werewolf.
Yeah, me too.
Of course, Chris is like, I get to be big and loud, and yeah, anything, I'm in.
That's pretty much the character I play every time anyway, so... Nah, it's like, I remember when you first mentioned that, I was just kind of like, oh, crap. Because you'd said before how you weren't really interested in doing a werewolf game for it. So I've had an idea for a very long time. So I was like, oh, sure, now you want to play. But
what, because the idea is suddenly bad?
Oh, no, just kind of like he claimed it now, so.
Yeah, I brought it up like a year ago or 2 years ago.
Exactly.
I think in our True Blood episode, I talk about how I was going to borrow from that to build the mythology. But a lot of it would be... around the change and how that would work.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you change into a werewolf and who's involved with that and what kind of obligations people have to their pack and work from there. But then I also was watching the TV series Prophet, which I recommend anybody who hasn't seen it, and how to incorporate those type of characters where, again, and this, I mean, Prophet has nothing to do with werewolves, but sort of something that's hidden inside and this mask that you wear when you interact with people, which I think is something that werewolf allows you to do more so than vampire. And vampire, you have a lot of obvious restrictions such as, hey, I only seen this guy out at, you know, at night. He's actually ice cold. Right. Whereas a werewolf, you're a living being. So you share a lot of similarities with people. So you can actually move among people more easily, whether you want to or not. And you have literally an animal inside you, or this animal side to you that you need to keep hidden and maybe barely controlled, even in like a boardroom setting. And to play that up, because I think you might be more inclined to do that in a vampire game where you're the master manipulator and you have those really interesting disciplines that allow you to take advantage of that. But why not have an urban mover, a shaker, and werewolf? That person could even be somewhat ostracized from the pack, but is very valuable to the pack. You can make the pack quite diverse because everybody's bringing a different set of skills, and the pack all realize that it's that diversity makes us strong. Whereas other packs might think, no, this purity makes it strong. And actually, Werewolf the Forsaken does have that concept of pure versus less pure.
Right.
Yeah, so I'd like to do that. So that would be a modern game, so a bit different from Song of Ice and Fire role-playing and Legend of the Five Rings and also 13th Age, which we're going to play. So, well, what about gaming-related resolutions, Chris?
Oh, my resolution? Well, to play and or play test some of my own games that I've made up, my homebrews.
Play test sounds a lot better rather than play, because that implies you haven't done anything with them.
No, actually, I've only done kind of like the single play by myself play of them, which for board games it works all right, but for role playing games it just doesn't work very well.
Oh, so, what kind of role playing games?
I've got three big ones that I want to try out. One is one specifically designed for Skype online that uses its Eclipse Phase Transhuman setting. Another one is based on the idea we had for time travel, which is kind of like, it's the idea is something similar to the Jenga thing where you can have a collapsing dice pool And the third one is just trying to homebrew my own thing off of the Song of Ice and Fire RP, but I've only just started that, so.
Okay, so you have no time to watch True Blood, but you have time to create three different games.
And because, watch Twilight.
Because,
and watch when Twilight, I'm, oh my.
Because while I'm doing, you know, pictures and things at work, I have time to think about the games I'm doing, but not the ability to put on a video, because my boss is there.
I understand.
So these are, some of these are original games, or?
The first two are original. They're brand new systems that I came up with. The third one is, it's based off of the Green Ronin Song of Ice and Fire RPG. Man, that is long. But it's still a redo. I'm starting from scratch, but with that idea in mind.
I'd be interested in that time travel game, because we had a lot of fun playing Time and Temp.
Hmm. Yeah, we did. Which maybe we should play again.
I agree. Well, it's one of those things that you don't need a lot of prep for. You can kind of throw it together in a night.
Yeah, you don't, yeah, you pretty much don't need any prep for that. Yeah, especially for characters.
Mm-hmm.
No, as someone who is interested in trying to produce my own games as well, yeah, that's a good resolution. So, I don't know, it's kind of difficult to just... maybe not difficult to find time to sit down and do stuff, but at least with me, I always come up with some new idea that I want to work on for a while, which pushes other stuff to, you know, the back of the queue, and I never end up finishing anything.
You can combine it with my idea to run the teen comedy. Yep, and that's the response I got yesterday on Facebook from you, too.
No. Like, I was trying to think, how does producing a game get mashed up with running a teen comedy
time
game?
Time travel. Teen comedy with time travel. Wait, so really? People don't have to, you don't have to worry about a lot of backstory or, like, setting what the world is, because everybody knows high school.
Right.
And you can everybody knows the stereotypes.
Hmm.
So run with it that way, and then somehow there's time travel in there.
I'm guessing...
You know that one night, instead of... That one night is going to make it happen, but this time you can time travel to really make it happen.
Right.
Actually, I think there was a movie with time travel and high school kids called My Science Project. Of course, the more famous one would be Back to the Future. As soon as I said that, I was like... I bet everybody's going, yeah, Back to the Future. And then I go, My Science Project. Oh, yeah, that one too.
What about Bill and Ted? How old were they when they did that?
Ooh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
See, it's been done before, so that's proof of concept.
Excellent.
Oh, jeez. Okay, you're right.
Yeah, I'm a little bit unclear on the Eclipse Phase via Skype game, but...
Well, remember, Chris said that if there was going to be a game to play over voice over IP, it would be Eclipse Phase because of the muses, that little computer program that everyone had in their head that's kind of like a digital assistant who talks to them. And correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I think you said it would be interesting to have other players play a character's muse or just the disembodied AR simulation kind of... that, you know, lended itself well to playing over Skype, where you couldn't see the other person.
So it's Herman's Head, the role-playing game.
Catching the reference.
Herman's Head?
You remember the name, but I don't think I've ever actually watched it.
You are dating yourself this episode, Lyle.
Nobody remembers Old Fox? Yeah, Old Fox is like cops, married with children. Herman's Head. Nope. All right.
Sorry. Like I said, I know the title, but I don't think I've ever actually seen the show.
In Herman's Head, he has like four people in his head that talk. One, two, or three.
Are you watching it now?
No, he's counting on his fingers.
There was the slob, the woman, the uptight guy.
Are these their official names?
It's been a long time since I watched Herman's Head. I think actually it's been a long time since anyone's watched Herman's Head.
The latter specifically, Wayne, and what you were saying is that I thought that the idea of kind of being a disembodied mind who's only inhabiting a robot shell, that Skype would be a really interesting way of representing that, because you're not face to face with somebody, so it's the separation of that situation kind of mirrors what the overall feeling in that kind of a game might be.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting, and then I wanted to add some dynamics to it, but I didn't see any systems that really did what I wanted to, so just tried to make one my own.
Oh, okay, so it's your own system.
It is.
But it's a complete homebrew. It would be comparable to Eclipse Phase.
Setting-wise, yes. System-wise, no, not at all.
Hmm. Okay.
Yep.
But anyway, it's still in a very infant phase, so it's not ready for prime time yet.
No, fair enough, but that's interesting. You're going to try and take what would probably be a drawback of a type of media, you know, the fact that, you know, voice over IP isn't all that great for interactions, and specifically trying to build a system around not exploiting that, but making full use of that. So,
and that's what I hope to do.
Yep.
How about you guys?
My resolution is actually very similar to the point where I almost went, oh yeah, me too, when you started talking about yours. And mine is just to get something published. You know, what with the ease of, you know, drive-through RPG and pretty much anybody being able to make a PDF. I've seen Kickstarter projects, or I've seen other people put things up where I said, maybe not in a spiteful way, but I could do something similar, and why haven't I? And I guess
agree.
It's kind of like what I said before, like I always get this new idea, which pushes an old one, you know, to the back of the queue, and I never finish anything. So my gaming-related resolution is to actually finish something and, you know, kind of put it out there in the wild. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to be for sale. And Chris, you and I have kind of put something out there already. We did at least two Japanese mythology-inspired Monster Heart skins,
which
are out there. But I would like to do something more substantial.
Yeah, like a downloadable book of those skins.
Right.
We're nearly done with the other two.
Well, one pretty much went all the way back to the drawing board, and I haven't looked at it in a couple weeks. But
like I said, I have a store set up for us, too. Let's do it, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there's some incentive. So for me, I think it was mostly just a discipline thing of actually, you know, knuckling down and finishing something, which can be quite difficult.
I know that feel.
Did you have anything in mind, or?
Honestly, I don't know yet. But yeah. Wow, I'm drawing a blank. It's easiest to start off with, you know, like a supplement for an existing product rather than coming up with something completely new from scratch. But what that would be, I don't know. I with Chris and I both being layout artists and graphic designers, I would kind of somehow like to get my foot in the door, whether that means, you know, laying something out for someone else or reformatting something. And I don't know, don't really know how to go about doing that, but I think, you know, making something on my own and showing that, hey, I can do that might be a start. So maybe kind of like a double-pronged resolution there.
Yeah, I'm there with you, man. Yeah. Totally. Actually, we have, in addition to playtesting my own, I want to playtest some of yours. I'm still looking forward to the fantasy version of Ubiquity.
Yeah, that was one of the projects where I was like working on it and kind of ran out of time to take it to the last convention, but then again, haven't touched it since, but should go back to it.
Oh. I will force you.
Oh, okay. Kind of scared now.
Does Ubiquity have an open license where people can do that, or?
I was actually talking to the guy who owns Ubiquity before they did the big Revelation of Mars Kickstarter, which took up all of his time, and we were they don't have an open license. He was very flexible and willing to work with me about actually getting a reasonable license to use Ubiquity.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that would be really cool to do. But as I said, it's just kind of completing it.
How about you, Lyle?
For resolutions, before the end of this year, we got to get that concept that we were talking about.
Hmm. Yes.
But that's not really, that's more like a type of game as opposed to a specific genre. I'd say it's more of like a different type of play style.
Mm.
So to do that, just, but I suppose once we get the cover art, go backwards, which drives you guys nuts. But oh,
what was that elbow I just felt in the ribs?
Yeah.
So, but beyond that, I mean, that's something that it would probably be best, like Wayne said, is go from something that's already out there and then see how viable it is by using what they have and stripping it down.
Right. Mm.
But that's something like, not to be too coy, but something for kids.
Mm.
So looking at a way that a game that kids would like that would introduce them into role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Which, we discussed this at work, obviously, but I think that's pretty important because, I don't know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of, from my perspective, new blood coming into the hobby, at least not in the, I don't know, the capacity I think it needs to continue to support the hobby.
Mm. Agreed.
Yeah, I think maybe some gamers might be a little bit optimistic in that they think, well, I'll introduce my kids.
Mm.
But I think part of the problem is we would introduce the kids the way we were introduced, and we would think that would work. And that might not necessarily be the case.
Because back in our day, we didn't have all these newfangled technological gizmos to distract us.
We didn't have the competition, but we also, I would imagine most people weren't introduced to role-playing games through their parents.
Exactly. Right. That's just what I was going to say. I mean, how, it's cool when all my buddies are doing it, but when my dad does it, that's cool, Dad. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. No, I don't want to play with you.
And, you know, I did that survey and people did bring up about, well, my playing group is pretty diverse. Cause I just said, well, what's the average age of your playing group?
Hmm.
It's pretty diverse. We have a 10-year-old and we have a, you know, 55-year-old or something like that.
In the same group. Oh, red flag.
Right. But a lot of time, and some people do have that diversity of age, but for the most part, a lot of people wouldn't want their 10-year-old kids to be playing with 30, 40-year-old adults.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter what kind of game it is. It could be like a really fun PG or G game, but still, it's an unusual age dynamic going on there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what are games that would make kids excited to go out on their own and buy or share with their friends so they're not relying on the parents to buy it for them, or they're not relying on playing what their parents are doing.
Right.
All right, well, that ends our episode on resolutions, games that we want to try, and I guess especially in the case of Wayne and Chris, games that we want to make.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Got to jump on that bandwagon, Lyle. Take advantage of these two designers you have on your group.
Yeah, I've asked you to do some cover art.
And
he's tried.
And we've said, give us some specs. And you're just like, oh, just make something.
No, I gave you specs.
For what it's worth, if we get even half of our resolutions done, it'll be a very exciting year to come. I'm looking forward to it.
You're definitely a glass half full type, aren't you?
Very much. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there online or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, join up in our G+ community and plus one us there. I think that's how that one works. Or you can always send us an email, info@idleredhands.com, or join us up in the forums hosted by Happy Jacks. You can get to that at idleredhands.com/forums. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Bye.
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 Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.